Welcome back, everyone, to the Education for Climate Talk. Today, I'm very glad to have with me Patrick Paul Walsh. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
We're going to talk with you about, and we see that on your background, the SDG Academy. So let me present you very briefly, Patrick. You are basically an academic. You're an economist by training, and you've been doing so many things in your life and working also in very prestigious environment in Harvard University, Columbia University. You've been working also in the European Commission, IMF, World Bank, a lot of things. But at the moment, you're academic in the University College Dublin, and you are seconded to the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network, SDSN, if you like acronyms, where you act as the Vice President of Education and Director of the SDG Academy. We see on your background. So very glad to have you with us so that we understand some important actions on initiatives you're leading, and also to understand a bit the evolution in a way. And that would be my first question to you, because you've been involved in that topic for now a lot of time. And we would be very much interested to learn more about your career in the field of education for sustainable development that led you to your current position as director of the SDG Academy. So please, if you can share with us your journey, and also so that we can understand also maybe some important evolution in that field, please, for yours.
Yeah. So first of all, it's a joy and an honor to be here, you know, on the Education for Climate Talks. They're so excellent. And I'm very happy to be part of this community in Europe talking about education for climate. So I think the way to start this is when we are interviewing people for jobs at the moment, for the first time, I'm actually starting to see people with undergraduates, postgraduates, PhDs, kind of postdoc work, or even placements or careers in, you know, working around climate and really have that background. But people of my age, I think, pivoted. You know what I mean? They started as an economist. So my little journey, I've always felt education was so important. In fact, I think I have been teaching every year since 1986, actually. And I've never stopped teaching because I think it's so important, even though I do research and other things. So not to start right at the beginning, but to start with the PhD. So my PhD as an economist in the London School of Economics was with Professor John Sutton. And my work was on industrial organization. And in particular, I started to do a lot of work on merger and cartels, predatory pricing and the like. And I guess, you know, this is an interesting starting point because I do think on the economic pillar, I think industrial structure really does matter. And I do think, you know, that competition policy and regulatory policy and industrial policy in general are important. And I'm actually coming home a little bit in the way I'm thinking about how coordinated industrial policies across the world could have social and environmental criteria and managing value chains that could be very useful for net zero pathways and so on. But that's good training, if you like, on the economic pillar. How I got onto the social issues was that during my time coming out of the LSE, we had the transition and you know, when the Soviet Union, we had a movement to decentralization, to, you know, market systems and political systems. We were kind of transitioning to mark to democratic structures, etc. But one of the big problems with industrial restructuring was labor mobility. So I got very much involved in social protection and labor force surveys, and understanding that workers had to become mobile and upskilled and reskilled, right? And again, this is going to be a story, I think, that's going to happen again when we have the regulation coming in for ESG compliance, et cetera, that we have to expect a lot of exit and entry of companies, and that workers have to be upskilled and reskilled again, you know what I mean? And we'll come back to that point. And then lastly, when I was actually teaching this stuff in Trinity College Dublin at the time, I started to get an interest. I always had an interest in environmental economics, but again, I had it more from an industrial point of view. I was looking at the Clean Air and Water Act in America in particular, but that's more about industry, you know, and how industry intersects. It's not about climate change. It's related, obviously. So in a lot of ways, My journey from, you know, looking at, let's call it efficiency and productive efficiency, to looking at equity, to starting to look at and say sustainability. I mean, I was very open to the idea of the Millennium Development Goals when they started, and kind of doing a more integrated approach and understanding that there is important spillovers and linkages between these dimensions, you know. So my first sort of, when I decided to move to University College Dublin in 2007, I actually decided to take on what's called a chair in international development. So it's a movement away from economics, a movement away to take an interest in Africa in particular. That's what I was interested. But I actually saw a course by a guy called Dylan Sutherland, who was in Durham. I don't know where I met him, but he told me about how to teach an elective on the Millennium Development Goals. And this is really quite interesting what he did, because it was the first time I suddenly got a toolkit to think about interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary sort of teaching as a kind of mandated elective. And when I came to UCD, I started this university-wide elective on the Millennium Development Goals, which is now still taught, called the Sustainable Development Goals, right? And the rhythm on that was quite interesting, in that it had, let's look at the indicators of the data, try and do a mapping of the world on, you know, child mortality, on maternal health, on access to water and access to energy, renewable energy, you know, so suddenly just to know the world you live in by looking at the metrics. Then we had that wonderful book by Amartya Sen on development freedoms, which is kind of the theoretical underpinning. But the most exciting bit, I think, that Dylan taught was this idea of going out to NGOs and policy and corporate folks all over the world to try and just get case studies of interesting interventions, and to teach that as a way of blending science with social science and so on. So that's kind of why I my kind of journey and my educational journey from being a mainstream economist who taught game theory and quants to suddenly teaching the Millennium Development Goals and Sustainable Development Goals. And I kind of had the tool set from my journey, but it was a transition, of course. Where the SDG Academy came from is that around 2007, I knew Jeffrey Sachs from before, from work on Poland and the transition to a decentralized market economy in Poland, and work on social protection and so on. But he ran a thing called the Millennium Villages, and he was the special advisor to Kofi Annan at the time, and they had the MDG project. And we had this kind of conversation around, you know, when we have students coming from the universities doing their placements, we tend to take the computer scientist, the lawyer, the doctor, the engineer, and we don't really take the development person, even though they kind of understand the reason why and why they need, you know, they have the right values, they don't necessarily have the right toolkit. So then with the MacArthur Foundation, we came up with a thing called the MDP, or the Masters in Development Practice, which 30 good universities around the world implemented. And it was about replacing what the MBA was for business. This was supposed to be the professional training for practice, particularly in communities in where there's poverty, and particularly around Africa. So that was the beginning of getting money and running things like global classrooms, getting credits for placements and fieldworks. And we were doing that on the MDGs. Obviously then, during the post-2015 agenda, SDSN was born as an entity that had kind of taught leadership, like what's called academic and legal oversight over the work programs that were coming into the Secretary General's area before they were given for the intergovernmental negotiations with David Donoghue and Ambassador Kamau, which led to obviously the Transforming Our World 2030 agenda for sustainable development. But within that, I guess the SDG Academy was born because there was a feeling that even in the UN system itself, that when you were integrating the environmental pillar into the social and economic pillar, and then you were also thinking about the interplay with the Security Council and Human Rights Council, etc. It was just a kind of a question mark out there, was did everyone need to be upskilled and reskilled? So initially the SDG Academy, funded by the UN Foundation or Ted Turner, was just all about basically creating MOOCs or courses on the science, policy and practice of the SDGs and taking the integrated approach and having that available for the UN system at large. It also could be used it could also be used obviously in university courses or by anyone. It was open and free, but that's what the SDG Academy was. So maybe I'll stop there. That's my journey on how somebody is now full-time, if you like, on education for climate or sustainable development. But really my journey has been this journey through understanding economics, society, governance, and environment, but also kind of understanding communities, understanding policy arenas, understanding corporates, but also being a kind of thoroughbred mainstream academic. But unfortunately, these are the ingredients I think you need to be capable of, you know, delivering really good courses for education for climate.
Thank you, Paul. Fascinating. So interesting to see an economist like you, like Jeffrey Sachs, basically, yeah. Also in the end, focusing so much on education and interesting interventions, as you said before. And I very much like your question is, does everyone need to be upskilled? A very big question. Maybe you can tackle that one by explaining to us concretely now what the SDG Academy is doing, if you want to focus on specific initiatives and share with us some outcomes, please. Yeah.
So originally, I'm an economist, so I'll talk about the supply side and demand side. So the supply side, what we were basically mandated to do was produce MOOCs, or these are massive online courses. That's just like content, right? And in the early days, we actually got heavily involved in production, you know, so we went on site and we did filming. And the whole idea was to have good science. Like, we had a course by Rockstrom on planetary boundaries. We had Sachs, you know, book on the ages of sustainable development, Wiesbeck on oceans. Very, very nice courses. We had them fronted by some celebrities sometimes, like Shakira was on the first stages of life, Bono on ethics in sustainable development and stuff. So we tried to mix a little bit science, but make it very user friendly in the sense, and also pitch it really towards the SDGs, in other words, these four dimensions and the policy frameworks, and also the practice elements, but also making it a kind of bit like a Netflix movie or something, you know what I mean, to make it more accessible. So it was very much about communicating and understanding what the SDG framework really was, right? And that its relation to the Paris Agreement and the biodiversity frameworks, right? Now, even though we have about 50 of those courses online, we have the one that we released recently on the Living Amazon is amazing. I'd recommend everyone to have a look at it. It's, it comes from the science panel on the Amazon, but we got drone footage and photographs from the NGO community right across the Amazon, and we integrated into the teaching and into the policy interviews and stuff. So it's really very nice. So that content is there, and we've actually had about 1 million users. So it's not insubstantial, right? The problem is 1 million is not 8 billion. In that sense, right? And of course, when I took on director of the SDG Academy, I really felt that we had to make an effort to mobilize the content. And what I meant by that is that at the moment, there are initiatives in government, particularly like in Ireland with the Climate Act, where everyone has to be upskilled in their HR system on sustainability, particularly senior people in the public service. But then what you have to do is, and we've done it for the Irish government, is that you have to, if you like, transfer some of the key videos and exercises and homeworks and put it into the Irish context, but into the LMS or the HR run of the government, right? And then they have to give a day off work and they have to certify it and incentivize it, right? But corporates are doing the same. Corporates are kind of waiting to see how the ESG framework really kicks in, or what are the best KPIs, or what way they do their compliance or their strategic planning. But the one thing they're willing to do is actually mandate right across their HR system or their staff to upskill on sustainability and to understand, like, really, what is this ESG compliance? What is the Paris Agreement? What are the SDGs? What is this company doing? What options do we have? So they're willing to do that. And universities are beginning to be very open to be more transitory in the sense that they would import content from the SDG Academy into their LMS, meaning we all use LMSs like Blackboard, Canvas, Moodle, that sort of structure, right? So the focus at the moment is to really build those partnerships to mobilize the content into the different platforms, right? And to start thinking about certification, right? So we'll get to that. One of the big projects we're doing is a Build Skills project. It's a European Commission funded project. But the question we're kind of asking is that we know the labor force has to be upskilled and reskilled. Labor mobility and innovation in the labor force is really vital as we go through this transformation, if it really happens, right? The problem is there's a disconnect a bit between policy, if you like, and the incentives created by governments, a disconnect between what the professional bodies are certifying and requiring in the different sectors, a disconnect between what vocational colleges are teaching and what universities are teaching. And really what has to happen and will happen, you know, over time is that that square has to be put together in the sense that there has to be coherence and interoperability between what the EU would like to see, what the professional bodies would like to see and certify, what the vocational colleges are doing and what academics are doing. And we're calling them micro-credentials and inclusion pathways, and we're calling them including competencies of digital sustainability skills. Like, this is happening in its own little way across the different sovereign states. But we just need, for what our dream is, to have something a bit more coherent. And even if it's just on the climate or on the Paris Agreement or net zero, and it'd be nicer on the SDGs, but on sustainability or sustainable development in general, we'd love to see a kind of a common certification across Europe. Like, that could be just an add-on. I mean, you could have sovereignty over your degrees and vocational colleges and professional training, whatever you want, you know, but just to have a little bit of coherence across Europe as a kind of an add-on criteria. Maybe something like the European Patents Office, where all solicitors who deal with intellectual property in Europe have to be certified by the European Patents Office. So maybe all academics or civil servants or corporates or policy folks have to be a bit certified by Europe on their ability to implement the SDGs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Super interesting. I stopped you because we've got little time, but I would like to tackle with you the issue, but you already started, of the challenges you encountered and your recommendation to overcome these challenges. But I understand that you focus very much on the fact that I appreciated that disconnection varies between what is provided and what is needed, which is also based on the fact maybe that the state will play certainly a very important role when it comes to transformation, adaptation, and that's what climate change is about.
Yeah.
And you need for that to have a state that understands also the issue, which means that you've got to train the policy officers. And I very much like that approach, which means also that we've got to work better together, and hence maybe the idea to have procedures on tools, instruments, maybe like community of practice, so what we can share more information and trying to work together. So I leave you the floor to end that talk on the challenges, please.
That's why the community of practice that you're running, and you know, this is why I was very taken. You know, it's nearly your idea, or this community of practice idea, is that, if we're honest about this, if the government brings in this legislative frameworks across the world, and we're going to get serious about climate change and ocean health and food systems, you kind of have to bring the government back in. But the government coming back in, they have to admit, is going to cause a lot of turbulence in the labor force. You know, a lot of companies are going to go bust, and others come in, and others have to restructure, etc. So what's really important is a flexible labor market. We've always known this in Europe, right? And to upskill and reskill everyone, right? But the best way to do this, obviously, is to have this coherence of what the government would do with their training programs or the incentives or facilitation it creates, and how it brings it in the professional bodies, the vocational colleges and the academics. This is the key, right? But I think one intervention, and we've talked about this, is, you know, when we have our nationally determined contributions or our COP meetings, or we have some of the future meetings, or you know, we have our European Commission or even parliamentary committee meetings, etc. I think everyone has to understand we got to go back to school. You know what I mean? Like, so I, as an industrial economist, somehow pivoted, but not everyone has pivoted. And most people in senior roles have not pivoted, right? And, you know, so I just think, and we've done this a little bit. So for COP28, the UAE brought in a thing called PAV. It was a youth champions program. And for the first time, they'd youth delegates around the presidency. And so the chairs of the presidency in each committee would have these EU delegates across the world giving them advice on the day-to-day running. It's different to the UN FCCC in the sense that those delegates kind of came in through the UN system, or those coming through the delegates, you know, through the member states, right? But this is also true in the UN. But there was a real realization that these young people, like, they needed training, they needed to understand the legal frameworks, they need to know what was on the table, they need to know how to negotiate, and just not just turn up and be a token youth person, but to be somebody actually really capable of contributing. But you could say that to all the delegates of the member states, or people across the European Commission, or academics, or anyone. So I think this point to take more seriously, that when we have nationally determined contributions and plans and climate action plans, and in corporates or in universities or anywhere, to actually step back and say, you know what, we all need to go back to school here. Like, it's actually quite important that we do the upskilling and the training, you know. And this is why this community practice is so important, because believe you me, when we understand the issue, all of us from our different entities will suddenly come together and say, okay, we need to be coherent and cooperate and make this as simple as possible. And I think it can work, but it does need people engaging and actually going back to school, as I call it, and doing their homeworks on how to care for nature and how to care for people, and not just at home, but Europe, and not just Europe, globally. I think it's just so important.
A wonderful conclusion. So we need to be coherent. We need to cooperate, and for that, we need to go back to school. So yeah. I'm sure the community members of Education for Climate Coalition will be fascinated by your talk, and I hope we will be able to work together. Thank you again, and have a good day.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk. Thank you very much.